Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is April 11th, 2019. It is a warm and blustery day here in Nashville with lots of pollen in the air from all the spring blooming trees and flowers. As we sit on our back porch, we can smell the sweet aroma of native azaleas blooming. And our bluebirds are actively nesting in two nesting boxes on our property. Over the past 40 years, there's been a virtual revolution in community parks and recreation services. Speaking here of park and recreation agencies of our city and county governments here in Tennessee. In the late 70s, the cities of Nashville and Memphis had truly first-class recreation agencies. The cities of Maryville, Alcoa, and Blount County had the only consolidated department in the state. The other large cities had recreation agencies which were not quite up to modern standards, perhaps reflecting the poverty of those cities, but certainly also reflecting a lack of imagination on the part of these local governments. In rural Tennessee, we had park and recreation agencies in some of our more prosperous county seats like Athens and Morristown and Sevierville, but we had counties that had no recreation agency whatsoever. We had communities that had been given grants for park facilities that had no functional capacity to manage them. Often facilities would be neglected and go into disrepair. Looking at the landscape today, there's been a remarkable change. The quality of facilities and program services available in our cities has never been better. Many new park and recreation agencies have been established. In cities like Germantown, Morristown, Kingsport, Murfreesboro, Clarkville, Sevierville, Rogersville, and even Pigeon Forge all have excellent agencies, just to mention a few. Knoxville and Knox County, Chattanooga and Hamilton County have all made significant strides. This didn't happen just by chance. There has been a concerted effort over the years to improve the quality and professionalism of local agencies. I think that this has contributed to the prosperity that Tennessee is experiencing at the present time. My guest today, Charlie Ellenberg, has been on the forefront of this effort. I've been lucky to call him a friend during all these times. When I first started thinking about doing this podcast, he was on my list of persons that I wanted to interview. And so, I'm lucky to have finally gotten him in front of the microphone. He has a wonderful story. I hope you'll enjoy my interview today with Charlie Ellenberg.
Camera.
Charlie Ellenberg.
Mark Fraley.
Welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Glad to be here.
It's terrific to have you here. What a beautiful day we have.
It's gorgeous. Great time driving down, just enjoying the scenery, the spring colors. And it was neat.
So you came over from Knoxville this morning.
Came this morning.
And I appreciate so much you doing that.
Glad to do it. Right. Went to the donut shop down there in Green Hills. We got here a little early, so we needed to
That is an old classic place in Nashville that only the locals know about, I think.
Well, I went, and we each got something nice. And
all right, that's great. Charlie, you and I have been friends for a long, long time.
I
think I first came to know you in probably 75 or 76.
Yeah.
You were working for TVA at the time in their community outreach program in their natural resources division.
Well, it was actually the technical assistance section.
Okay.
At the
all
time.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And we got you guys to come to Gatlinburg to help us do a site plan for a new city park that we were trying to build, mm-hmm. called Mills Park.
I remember it.
And you were so helpful to us. Charlie, I want to talk to you today about your career and your life circumstances and observations about parks and recreation and the changes that have occurred in our field.
Glad to
since
that.
You and I first got to know each other and before that. Where did you grow up, Charlie?
I grew up in East Knoxville, a little community called Burlington.
Okay.
Most people, if you know Chilhowee Park and the zoo, that's in Burlington.
Okay.
And we grew up there, went to high school, played ball, football, basketball, ran track, and fortunately was decent enough. I'm not going to say good, but I got a scholarship to Clemson. And
to play football. Okay.
And they sent me my registration material, and I'm going through, flipping through the curriculum guide, and I'm looking. I told my wife, I said, there's no PE major. She said, what? I said, yeah, they didn't even tell me that. And so I started off in liberal arts.
Okay.
And floundered around for a couple of years. And I'll tell you a little side story. I don't know if it'll mess up your podcast or not, but Coach Howard at Clemson was a big, burly man, always had tobacco dripping out his mouth. And he had a really unique, deep, growly sounding voice. And they called a meeting of all the athletes in the winter of my sophomore year. And he announced, the president of the university was there, he was there, and then there was a stranger there that we didn't know. And they introduced Dr. Burt Brantley.
I knew Dr. Brantley, of course.
Who was going to handle a new curriculum. And so he presented everything, and we were in the gym, the old gym at Clemson. And they finished, and Coach Howard got up and said, now boys, some of y'all need to get in here, this new program. And they signed up, several athletes signed up, and the first semester, first two semesters was a bit of a joke. And then it turned. And you could sense it in just the determination of the faculty. They knew what was going on. And they said, we're not going to be having a part of it. And they turned it into a top-notch program. And fortunately, I was in it. And today, I can say I graduated in the first class of Parks and Recreation Administration. And at TVA, when I graduated, let's see. I graduated and I did an internship with Mary Wherry.
Okay, at Metro Parks here in Nashville.
Metro Parks. I met her at the Parthenon, and I was sitting on the steps, and here comes walking down the sidewalk Mary and her stalwart look, you know, and I said, right. Oh, I'm in trouble. And she came down, and I had 10 of the best weeks of my life getting to know Metro Parks and Mary Wherry. And some of the staff.
What'd you do in Metro?
Well, that was just summer rec.
Okay.
10 weeks of experience at the various, Percy Warner, worked a pool for a week, worked community center, worked with the design folks. She gave us some broad exposure. And getting towards the end, I said, do you have any jobs available? They did, and I applied and I got hired.
Okay.
So I started my career as a graduate from Clemson and full-time with Mary. And the best decision I ever made was to go to Metro Parks, because they absolutely give you great exposure, and they're recognized nationally
right.
as one of the best in the country.
Right.
And I did that. After 2.5 years with Metro Parks, I was a community center director. I opened John Trotwood Moore Junior High, that community center.
Okay.
Which I loved. It was a great job, great facility. I don't think it's too far from here, is it?
No, it's just maybe a mile from here.
Okay.
Right.
2.5 years later, I get a call from Dr. Burt Brantley, and he wants to talk to me about a job. And I listened to him, and he told me about it. It was in Marion, South Carolina,
okay.
as director. And I told him, I said, I don't think I'm interested right now. I just got promoted to Jim Fike's position as athletic director.
Okay.
But he was moving up to concessions, I think, concessionaire.
Right. Business operations.
Business, yeah. Money making.
Right.
And I got off the phone, told Donna, my wife, what I told him. She said, okay. Here's my question. Do you want to be a big fish in a little pond or a little fish in a big pond? And I said, okay, I'll call him back. And I did, and the mayor was a Clemson man.
Okay.
And I didn't know that when Dr. Brantley called me. But he had called Dr. Brantley, contacted Clemson, says, we need a recreation director. Ours is leaving. And he left to go to Spartanburg, Russell Hart, neat guy. And so they set it up and I got hired and stayed there about 2 years and then went to work for the PD Regional Planning and Development Council as a historic preservation and recreation planner.
Oh my goodness.
And the director, E.P. Rogers, walked into my office one day, had a suit on, vest, tie. He sat down and he introduced himself and he said, "I'm so-and-so with the PD Regional Planning Council. I'd like you to come to work for me." I didn't know him from Adam. And we talked and come to find out, I had just gone through a Land and Water Conservation Fund application process.
Okay. For the city that you were
in? For the city I was in. We were lighting a ball field.
Right.
And he said, "We have no one on our staff who knows anything about it. You're the best thing, closest thing to somebody knowing something about it." And so I went to work for him. And it was a good experience. It was short, though, because they gave me an opportunity to go to conference. And I went to one in Atlanta.
Southern Regional Conference?
No, it was something sponsored by NRPA, I think. Could be something sponsored by government because it was dealing with technical assistance.
Okay.
And that sparked an interest to me. So I went down there and I'm listening to these agencies, and at that time, Bureau of Outdoor Recreation, right, which handled Land and Water Conservation Fund grants, they spoke. Forest Service spoke, and then here comes this guy from TVA, and he was a recreation planner, and he talked about all the things that TVA did in recreation for the communities. I'd never heard of that. And it sparked my interest, and so basically I decided I'd like to go work at TVA. And so I pursued that job and ultimately was hooked up and got an interview with the chief of the recreation branch. And he hired me on a 6-month temporary contract. And I moved my family on that contract.
So this was David Pack? Was that
no,
who was
David
at the time?
No, David wasn't in the picture yet.
Okay.
He was a staff person at that time.
All right.
It was Jack Hendricks.
Okay.
And I know this helped me, and I hate to do it, put a plug in. He was a civil engineer graduate from Clemson.
Okay.
And we interviewed, and basically they called me and offered me the job. Told me it was 6 months, and I moved my family on that basis.
So, Charlie, about what year was that you started there?
That would have been 72.
Okay. All right. So by the time that I met you, you'd been doing it several years.
Just 2-3 years.
All right.
And they let me, it was funny, I went through my files to kind of refamiliarize myself with some things, and I found a memo that I wrote at the request of Jack Hendricks, the branch chief. And it basically announced that we had new services to offer in the recreation branch. And it was dealing with community recreation assistance. And it was land and water conservation, grant assistance, recreation appraisals for programs and administrative activities, and one other thing. But he sent that to two division directors who had outreach programs of their own. And that started my career at TVA. And I mean, it started in a hurry. Because TVA had a relationship with all of the tributary area development agencies, which were state agencies.
Right.
And they had staff that interacted with them. And so that information went out through those people. And man, we got more work than you could shake a stick at.
Well, you know, today people think about TVA and they think the electric company, the power distribution and, you know, generating electricity. But the original mandate of TVA, the organic act, so to speak, of the agency, envisioned a broader perspective of things to do.
It did.
Yeah.
It was quite broad and quite flexible.
Right.
A lot of people don't know that Section 24 of the TVA Act allowed TVA to conduct demonstrations.
Okay.
And it sort of defined it, but they left it wide open to where you could do whatever you wanted. If you can get the funds for it, and at the time we were on appropriated money from Congress.
So there was the money that came from the power operation. Then you went to Congress and got appropriations for those special activities that you wanted.
Well, yes, but those were being done simultaneously. Right. They had been done for years simultaneously.
Right.
There was they had some formula that dealt with how much money came from the power program to the appropriated programs. And I can't explain it. Nobody ever explained it to me.
So, Charlie, when you first came on board at TVA, now you have a jurisdiction that includes six or seven states.
All of Tennessee and part of six surrounding states.
Right. What were your observations of the state of parks and recreation as delivered by local governments at that time?
Well,
you'd had a great experience at Metro.
I did at Metro, and when I went to South Carolina, I hooked up with their state association, South Carolina Recreation and Parks Society.
Right.
And I met two gentlemen, Carl Hust and P.K. Fuller. And they worked with the State Technical Assistance Organization. And I hooked up with them hard, learned a lot, learned how to do some things. And I kind of took their model when I came to TVA, and I said, this can be replicated in the Valley. And I was given the leeway at TVA through our branch to promote things like that.
Right.
And one of the things we did was we notified the state agencies. One of the first guys I met was Jerry Dillahay, who managed the Land and Water Conservation Fund.
Right.
I told him what we were doing, and he was so excited. And I said, "Why are you so excited?" He said, "We can't give the money away." And I said, "I think we can help you." And so we entered into sort of an informal partnership, if you will.
Right.
No commitment on anybody's part. You apply, and if it meets the merits of the process, you may be awarded a grant. And so we got covered up with grant application things. That in 73, and I'll remember it because it's just a unique thing. We did a grant application for the city of Knoxville. It's about $200,000. And the project was the initial development of the Third Creek Greenway, which is the foundation of their entire Greenway system. And one of our engineers designed this bridge that they had fabricated, I think three or four different places. And we laid out, we had a staff, and we went out and laid the trail out. It was between Kingston Pike, basically, and a back road, one of the two, but it followed Third Creek. And I did the BOR application, Land and Water Conservation Fund, and it was funded. And so that was just an exciting thing. And you look back on that, and that's one of the best things about the work I was involved in. You can look back and see how things sprouted, and now they're significant in the delivery of services.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember coming to Tennessee and, you know, being in a very small town in Gatlinburg and not knowing anybody in Parks and Recreation. And you were the person that said, "Mark, you need to come to the TRPA meetings."
I remember.
And we got to know those people, and that was a great big help. But the landscape of who was doing local park and recreation at that time was it was what it was, but it was unsophisticated, clearly, and you had very few people that had any training.
None, very few. It was driven locally in many cases by politics,
right,
as to who was a director.
Right.
There were, at one point in what we were doing at TVA, we did a 10-year plan for recreation, and one of my focuses was developing in the whole valley every community that had a recreation director or delivery system, and we showed the haves and the have-nots on this little map. It was just a product in a report,
right.
But you look at it and you go, wow, today things have changed dramatically for the better.
Right.
And it's nice to see that that has occurred.
Fantastic. You know, one of the things that you all got involved with early on was the creation in Tennessee of the Parks and Recreation Technical Advisory Service.
We did.
I remember first hearing that was in the planning when I was in Sevierville. Tell us about the story of how that evolved.
Well, I don't remember who was in charge, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
And everybody said I didn't have a direct role.
Right.
With hands-on. I did get representatives of BOR at the time. They did a study, the first study in Tennessee of what's your department situation? What's your revenue? What's your staffing needs? How much you spend on this and that? And I forget what we called it, but it was a good tool. And that's the kind of product that other states produced.
So this was a survey that y'all did,
yes,
of local governments.
Local government,
that's right,
survey.
To see how many acres that each had and whether they had a director, how much they spent per capita.
Correct.
That sort
correct
of stuff. I hadn't thought about that study until you just mentioned that. I remember that now.
That was it. Well, I'm glad you remember.
And there was a lot of discrepancy.
Absolutely. And, you know, somebody spending $100 per capita and somebody spending 25 cents. Or, I mean, you know, it was ridiculous,
right,
all across the board.
Right.
But that tool, the product, can be used for, well, look, this is a target we need to shoot for.
Right.
In seeking money through our budget.
Right.
The interesting thing, there are people all over the state involved in this thing. Nashville in particular. TDEC supported that creation of a service.
Right.
And J.W. Rice in Chattanooga.
J.W. was the director in Chattanooga at the time.
He was the director,
right,
and he'd been around a while.
Right.
But he had a local politician introduce legislation, the bill, that created PARTAS.
Right.
And it was created and off and running, and my goodness.
That was Ray Albright was the senator from,
yes,
Chattanooga, and I can remember, I think, that Lyle Richter was the TRPA's legislative chairman at the time
that was
going on.
A designer for Metro Park.
That's
right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. He
landscape
was
the
landscape architect guy, but you know, knew everybody in Nashville, and you know, was kind of had a gift for gab, of course. You remember Lyle?
I do.
And was kind of our lobbyist on because he was in Nashville and had an interest in doing it. And so the creation of that program, and there's been, you know, I was privileged to be the first person to be hired to do that. But that program really has taken off, and they've created a lot of new departments in Tennessee.
They have. One of the things that we tried to do was replicate that service through supporting other states. And we didn't directly, I think, affect any other state to do it, but we had a relationship built with Kentucky and Mississippi. We were talking to people there, and I don't know what happened ultimately. Our focus changed, and my primary goal was obviously Tennessee.
Right.
And that happened. And man alive, did it go crazy doing good things.
You know, one of the things that I observed, and I think talking to Jerry Dillahay back then, the state would make these grants to small cities and counties, and they didn't have the capacity to run the park or program the park. And so you had tennis courts there and nobody playing tennis, you know.
In some cases you did, and I have to admit I'm a culprit in this regard, and I got two or three of mine, Minor Hill, St. Joseph, and Loretta, Tennessee. little small communities on the southern central border.
What, Giles County, is that what that is?
I think so.
Yeah, okay.
And we did site plans and land and water applications for all three of those that got funded. Scotts Hill. I mean, it was crazy. And my bosses would question me sometimes, what are you doing? Who's going to take care of that? And I said, they've got committee. I mean, you know, I got away with it. And I was, in part, it was just a part of the delivery of our service.
Right.
But in hindsight, we could have done a better job.
Well, you know, what one of the things that happened was the state kind of reworked the way that they made grant selections.
That made it tougher. They had a grading system.
Right.
And I was pleased to have been involved in setting up some of that with Jerry and other staff.
Right.
They did a good thing by trying to control it and give it to the people who had the ability to manage, take care of whatever they built. They didn't necessarily eliminate funding to small communities, but they controlled it much better.
Well, the communities had to at least express an interest in the management of the place.
Absolutely.
And if they did that in a creative way, then that was, they got credit for that.
They did.
But the best way for them to get the credit was to actually engage a professional to manage their local program.
And we talked that up as best we could.
Right.
That sort of evolved in another form at TVA. We funded summer recreation demonstration programs. And the purpose was to show local government how you can use existing school facilities and put a professional on staff and program them. And obviously you create a relationship with the education system or give the existing park facilities to this party. And I've got a grin today and smile about it, but the best and one of the earliest demonstrations we did was Franklin Williamson
County.
That's right. And we funded a summer program there, and we had recreation students from all over the Southeast involved. I don't remember how many, but I want to say 8 or 9. And they were great kids. But nobody created a problem. They worked with two local ladies, Judy Schuford and Kathy Oldham.
Right.
And these were two movers and shakers. You wanted to get something done, you involve Judy or Kathy. Judy told me a story of getting a grant approved. And I said, she said, it was kind of funny. I said, what happened? She said, well, we had the grant approved from Nashville and the county executive wasn't going to sign it. He wasn't going to let us have it. And I said, so what happened? She said, we took the application and the local television station and got an appointment with the county mayor, I guess, at
right.
the time. And went in and said, Mayor, whoever you were, we've got this grant and all it needs is your signature and we get the money. He signed it and they got the grant. That's just the way they worked, but they were so far, they supported Parks and Rec, the development.
So in 19...
That was 79.
79, Franklin in Williamson County was not the prosperous area that we know today.
It was prosperous.
Yeah.
It was developing. When I started working in that county, there were no interstate crossovers or exits. There was one, basically,
right.
when
right.
you got south of Nashville. And when I finished working in Williamson County, they had an exit or a crossover and all these roads on the interstate. I mean, people got rich off of that just
right.
because TDOT selected them. Judy Schuford, Clemson was playing Georgia on national TV in some big game about 3 or 4 years ago. And I was in my den and my family was with me and we were excited and the game was starting. I got a phone call and it was Judy Schuford.
Isn't that fun?
And she laughed so hard. She said, I don't believe I got you. And I said, well, what do you want? She said, I just wanted to talk to you and say hi.
Well, you know, soon after that, it wasn't very long after that summer program, they actually formalized a joint park and recreation entity, agency, from Franklin, Williamson County, and Brentwood, I think was...
Brentwood, was Fairview involved?
I don't think Fairview was in it. Maybe they were.
They asked us for some help, right. And we gave them information and materials from Maryville, Alcoa-Blount County as a model.
Right.
And they perhaps used that. Now, I think since then they've split and gone separate ways.
Right.
But TVA, interestingly, had an interest in Franklin before this, and I didn't know about it. There's reclaimed phosphate mines.
Oh, yeah. Down in Mount Pleasant.
Well, there's something right there in Franklin at a park. I can't think of the name of it.
Okay.
And it's on reclaimed phosphate land.
Okay.
So we had an interest already.
Well, I didn't know that. So the other, switching gears here for just a second, throughout all that time, of course, you were involved as a professional at TVA. Mm-hmm. You were also, got yourself involved in the organization called the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association. And, of course, that's a membership organization which consists of people that work in that field. Tell us about your experience with TRPA when you first got involved and how that evolved over time.
Interesting you would ask that question, because I've got a couple of stories. I don't know if I can tell them or not. But I first got involved when I was working at Metro Parks.
About
2.5 years, and I joined TRPA and went to their meetings, and Mary supported us going and helped out financially. I left, joined the same organization in South Carolina. And they had a well-run organization. Their districts were active, and it's a place where I borrowed ideas.
Right.
And I stuck them in the back of my head and hoped they would stay there and I could pull them out when necessary. And I wanted to be president. I saw what I thought might be an opportunity to push for a shift and change of the organization. And there were people who had been involved since TRPA's creation, I think in 52 or
That's
53.
Right.
Yeah. And they kept turning over the same people, nothing ever changed, and it was frankly maybe time. And so actually there were two of us who wanted to be president. Gerald McKinney, superintendent of recreation in Memphis.
At Memphis, right.
Great guy.
Right.
And he and I both wanted to be president, and president-elect.
Right.
And so we were nominated, or however that process worked then, and election was held, and lo and behold, there was a write-in winner. Knoxville.
I didn't know this. Now, I don't remember this. Remind me of this now. I don't remember any of this.
Well, I was... Maynard Glenn was elected president-elect for the second time. He was president in the 50s or the 60s.
Okay.
And it was basically a smack of the wrist... You young whippersnappers aren't coming in here and going to tell us what to do.
Right.
This is our organization. Well, fine.
Right.
We'll wait a year or two. But that's what happened.
Okay.
And at that time, the cities controlled block voting.
Okay.
They would submit the votes for all their staff and vote one way or whatever they wanted.
Right.
And so they had a write-in campaign, and I'm sure they worked it up across the state. Fine. Hurt her feelings a little bit. But you got to go along and grow with stuff like that. So the next year, we ran again. And I think Gerald was elected the next year, which was fine. He just, like I said, he's a superman and did a super job in Memphis. And the third year came up. I said, well, heck, I still like to be president-elect. And I ran, and I think I ran against Ken Steelman from Oak Ridge, and I barely beat him.
Wow.
Barely beat him. But I was elected, and I thought I could make some changes in how TRPA did some things. And one of the things that got me was, as a committee chair prior to this, you come to Nashville for a board meeting and you'd be here 4, 5, 6 hours. You don't know how long you're going to be here. And people would talk kind of just to talk, to hear themselves talk.
Right.
And so I asked the members of the board, those appointed, those elected, I said, can we try something? You guys submit a report when we have a quarterly or whatever meeting to me. I'll have them duplicated and bound and put together, stapled together, and I'll distribute them to everybody. And so when we come to our meeting, you don't have to read your report. Everybody hopefully will have already read it. So our meetings went from 4, 5, 6 hours to 30 minutes or 45, whatever. It cut it down. It was a little ridiculous, I guess. You drive from Knoxville and you have to turn around and go back pretty quick. But it served its purpose. It served a point to me because there's other way to do things, and they responded by doing it. And we had some great people on the board back then. Jerry Gist was one that came in.
That's right.
I can't remember everybody. That's one of the bad things about getting old, retiring.
Well, one of the changes that you were involved in early in your presidency too was, you know, the annual meetings had always been held in the big cities. It was either Chattanooga, Nashville, Knoxville, or Memphis. Maybe rarely in Kingsport.
No, up until that time, I don't think they did.
But you and I conspired together to have the meeting be in Gatlinburg.
Gatlinburg, buddy. Y'all don't know what you're missing until you come to Gatlinburg. And that was a great, great conference.
Well, it was different because, the way it had been done before was the host city was basically responsible for delivering the whole program.
Yes.
All right. So with a small city like Gatlinburg, and Marty Nicely was the director then, they didn't have the capacity to deliver the entire. They did a lot of things, and they did a nice job. But it really required the committees of TRPA to work together in a way that they really had not done before.
And solicit support and money.
And
from their communities.
And arrange for topics and people to come in and speak.
Yeah.
That were, you know, that people were interested in hearing. And it turned out to be a pretty successful meeting, I thought.
I think it did. And I think it set a good example. Kingsport, I know they put on some great programs.
I think Franklin has hosted it.
Franklin hosted.
Murfreesboro's hosted it.
Murfreesboro, law, yeah.
Yeah.
Did Lonnie go to, he went to Sevier County. Pigeon Forge.
Lanny Goodwin is now in Pigeon Forge.
Pigeon Forge, right. That's where Lanny went.
That's right.
He followed John.
The Sevier County story is another story. I mean, that's another place where y'all did a summer recreation program.
We did. We hired UT's graduate, John Smith.
Right.
And he operated out, I think, 3 schools maybe. Don't remember them all. And frankly, I don't know if it had an impact on the creation of any services there or not. I don't know if Pigeon Forge recognized what could happen.
Well, Pigeon Forge now has its own agency.
They have their own.
Sevierville does, and the county still does not, that I'm aware of.
No, I don't think so either.
In fact, Bob Parker commented to me recently that they're still, you know, footing the bill for people that live in Sevier County and use their facilities.
They need to have an upcharge for those folks.
Well, yeah, you know, some of that can be done, but some of that's not legal.
Okay.
So you can't charge one citizen one price and another citizen another price. So when their land and water conservation funds
right.
involved.
Right.
So and a lot of those parks are built with federal money, so they can't discriminate in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the other changes that you've seen in Parks and Recreation? Of course, we now have a full-time director executive for the TRPA.
That was huge. We had a demonstration at TVA for TRPA, and I mean, a young lady was hired, and she was based in Norris. It wasn't really that effective, just because probably the way it was structured and where we were located. But I think, and Margaret Seedsman, I remember Margaret from Australia, working at TDEC, and that was one of the best things that happened for TRPA, for the state. Recreation services kind of have boomed. The professional membership has grown. We had about 1,000 when I was president. I think they're around maybe 1,400 now. Is that right?
That's right.
And things, the greatest thing that has occurred in the field is the gradual evolution of the recognition of parks and recreation as a vital community delivery program, as something that's necessary or can be successful or can raise revenue, be self-sufficient in some cases. And that's evolved over the last three or four decades to a point where it's just great to be, say I was a part of some of that, you know, going on in the early years.
Well, cities have begun to realize that when corporate people are looking for a place to relocate and put a new plant or a new office for their business, they're looking at the towns and saying, well, what does this town offer us? And you know, good professionally administered park and recreation programs and facilities is part of that mix that these companies are looking for.
Definitely. At some point in my career at TVA, there was a publication, and it was a commercial publication dealing with industrial development and that sort of thing. And they had a story on the top 10 things that industry looks for in relocating. And number one was services related to recreation. It could be outdoor, it could be indoor, but it was that focus that they thought their people would focus on to say we like this area and this is offered. I'm drawing a blank here. That'll get cut, I hope.
Charlie, I wanted to talk about one thing with you that was kind of a fun thing that you mentioned to me recently. The little city park in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, was called Minot Park, up at the end of Airport Road in Gatlinburg. And, of course, that was the first little city park that Gatlinburg built.
Did you manage the getting that grant?
I did not. You know, that was done before I got there. And it was done with HUD money, Housing and Urban Development money. So there was a city manager there by the name of Joe Booth who was responsible for that happening. But that property was 7 acres. Imagine how much that property is worth in downtown Gatlinburg. 7 acres of property. But you remember what that property was before it was a city park.
I was a participant on that property, and there were actually, I don't know about the 7 acres, there were two focuses on what is Minot Park.
Okay.
When I was using it. All Minot right. Park was built on the Lower Methodist Church camp.
Okay.
It was a usually a seasonal camp in the summer. And then there was an upper camp.
Okay.
And there were cabins. We had a swimming hole down the road. I mean, it was cold, cold water.
So that little park had been a summer camp.
Owned by the Methodist Assembly.
Oh, Methodist Assembly. And the place was called the Assembly Grounds.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Upper camp and lower camp.
Okay.
And every church, I bet, in the Holston Conference used that.
Well, you were telling me that you, as a camper, did some sort of a time capsule.
I participated in it.
Okay. All right. Tell us about that.
We just, they came into the mess hall and announced what they were going to do, and they held up a Nabisco cracker tin. They said, everybody wants to put something in here and we're going to bury a time capsule. And we'll come back in 25 or 30 years when you're all adults and dig this up. So you can put what you want in. Okay. And everybody, I think, contributed something small, a dime, a penny, a note, whatever. And lo and behold, when I went back to Minot Park for the first time, and I'm looking at Minot Park and I'm saying, somebody probably dug up our time capsule and took off with it.
You know, and I was not around them, but I speculate that capsule must have been buried somewhere around where the picnic pavilion is there in the park.
It was
now.
Well, actually, it was right outside the mess hall.
Okay.
And the picnic pavilion is close.
Okay.
I think it's real close in there.
Well, that, you know, to me, that's just a fun story. Because it illustrates how a park, or that outdoor recreation experience that you had in Gatlinburg, some way must have gotten in your blood and gotten you into parks and recreation.
I guess actually getting into parks and rec, I'd have to give credit to Maynard Glenn. Well,
tell me what you mean.
He had a man working for him by the name of Bob Beard.
Okay.
And Beard was over maintenance.
Okay.
And Bob dated a lady and ultimately married her, who knew my wife, my mother. And that lady had stayed with in our house. I was a child. And so my older two brothers both worked for Bob Beard, working for Maynard Glenn. And when it was came time for me to earn some money, 90 cents an hour, I think, is what we were paid. And Mom said, well, we'll talk to Bob and see what happens. And Bob gave me a job, and I worked two or three summers for Knoxville Parks and Rec. And it was a good learning experience. I mean, you were out dealing with facilities. You were maintaining ball fields. You were lining ball fields. You were cutting weeds and poison ivy off of crazy places that you shouldn't be, but it's there, so we had to cut it down. It was fun. I enjoyed that. But it set a mark on my brain about where I came from and then where I went ultimately and how I got there. And it was impregnated on my brain. Yeah, it was a factor.
Yeah.
It had to be a factor.
So you're, in retrospect now, you know, you're retired now, living in Knoxville.
Mm-hmm.
Your career in parks and recreation, everything you wanted it to be?
Yeah, except TBA, and this is a part where I didn't know I should tell you or not or say anything, but TBA was getting into doing some different things than they were. They considered they could do this because they had done it in the past when they sold land. They sold land on the reservoirs back in the 40s. And that was for development. They were wanting to encourage development. But there were people coming to TVA and wanting to exchange property to gain a lakeside piece of property. And I was involved in several on Fort Loudoun, and those were the first of exchanges. And one was, I'm not going to say names or anything, but one involved about a 13-acre piece of land that TWRA owned, and they were granted rights from TVA.
Okay.
And it was surrounded. It was, set in the middle of a totally private area behind it and around it.
Right.
And we were offered, we to approve, the proposal was that land adjacent to TWRA property up on the upper end of Fort Loudoun, where it splits with the Holston and French Broad. And IAMS Nature Center mm-hmm. is up there, mm-hmm. and 150 acres were offered for that 13. And TVA looked at it from a standpoint, every program that did environmental reviews was involved in making a comment. And the thing that I saw was that that enhanced the land base dramatically on that end of the reservoir. And that end of the reservoir, even though it's disjointed, I mean, South Knoxville is kind of hard to get in and out of sometimes, but it still could have an effect in a positive sense. And so it was supported within TVA, and that happened. And today, the South Knoxville Wilderness Experience, mountain biking trails, I mean, they're promoting this stuff nationally. And I can't help but think that we might have contributed a positive note towards that kind of development. Mm-hmm.
So your job at TVA changed from one that was focused on a relationship with the cities and counties to really looking at TVA's land base and trying to optimize the recreational utility of that land base.
Totally. Very perceptive, Mark.
Yeah.
We were decentralized. We were centralized in the 80s. And when Reagan was elected president, Reaganomics were affected.
Okay.
And I was the manager of the Community Recreation Project. We were disbanded. I was kept on. All my staff got jobs.
Right.
But I was kept on as a community recreation specialist. Well, then some years later, and that was fine. I handled things across the valley. Some years later, they decentralized. And every TVA had 11 district offices at the time. And some they looked at those like they tied them together like the old districts in TVA. Okay. Had the central, the southern, the western, and so forth. And they put a resource specialist in each that served each district. And when they did that, they sent us to the field. So I moved to Athens and worked, and actually my entire career I worked this area, Watts Bar, Chickamauga, Nickajack, mm-hmm. Fort Loudoun, Telco, Fontana, the Mountain Reservoirs. And from my perspective, they were some of the best to work. They were active with things going on, Knoxville Waterfront
Beautiful
Park.
Places.
Oh, great places today that have evolved.
Right.
And so I served in the role that you started to describe, and it was the recreation responsibility that didn't have necessarily something to do with a TVA facility at a dam or a public use area. That was managed by our property folks.
Right.
And I learned a lot doing that, a whole lot.
Right.
I was a participant in environmental reviews. Fortunately, most of them were of an environmental assessment nature. They were insignificant. And then we had several that involved full-blown environmental impact statements, and the depth of your work increases significantly for those. Right. We were dealing with chip mills in South Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and forestry developments, right?
Yeah, but... Right. Everybody's involved. You know, where are they taking the timber from? Where is the chip mill going to be located? What will it impact?
Right.
That was one example. Anything dealing with land in my district, I had a recreation role in.
Right. So then you were telling me that you retired. And how long has it been since you retired?
I retired in 2004.
Okay, all right.
Almost 32 years to the day, July the 10th. No, I retired July the 5th. So I was close to full 32 years. And I loved it. I mean, I loved my job at TVA. They allowed me to work in the association. Early on, it was a lot different. That relationship changed from a TVA perspective. But they never said... Don't go to TRPA conferences or NRPA conferences. They supported those. They saw benefit, even though all of the recreation staff weren't involved in the association necessarily.
Right.
And they were great to work for. We had the thing that I think I admired the most about TVA was if you wanted something done, there was somebody at TVA that could do it. and I learned the value of civil engineer degree. I don't have one, right. But I worked with staff who did, right. And our branch chief was a civil, the division director was a civil, my section manager early on was a civil, but those guys, and then the branch chief ended up being, David Pack was a civil graduate, and they were so talented in what they could do, and I learned a lot from them, and appreciate it today, still.
Fantastic. So, Charlie, what are you doing in your retirement?
Chasing antiques every day.
Tell us what that means.
What that means is I look online every day and I try to find auctions that I can find things I'm interested in bidding on. I'm in one antique mall. I've been in as many as three.
So you have a little shop?
We have a booth.
Okay, okay.
In Clinton, Tennessee. At Corner Antiques. It's one of the best shops in the South.
All right.
Put a plug in. And my booth name is Tennessee Valley Antiques, or look on the tag for just TVA.
So, okay, Tennessee Valley Antiques. So, folks, if you get to Clinton, Tennessee, make sure you go and visit the TVA booth.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Charlie, it's been a thrill to have you here.
Glad to do it. Why near as punishment as I thought it was going to be?
Well, I haven't bitten anybody quite yet.
Okay.
Maybe someday in the future I might bite somebody. But thanks again, Charlie.
Thank you.
All right.